first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Politics.com and EdSpringson.com, where you can go for all the latest stories we're doing, following, or for podcasts of this show. While you're at those websites at LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringson.com, please make an effort to join our email newsletter, and we will send you updates on a weekly or a monthly basis, your choice. We do not do the tail end spam like everybody else does. We think it's ridiculous, so we're not going to do it to you. If you are so inclined, we can certainly use your help. We are trying to raise funds now for upgraded equipment. It's going to make a better show and a better website for you. Please help us with the GoFundMe page at edsprinkson.com, or use the handy-dandy donate buttons on either of those pages and make a donation through PayPal. If you don't like doing things online, that's great, too. You can also write to P.O. Box 58146 right here in Louisville, Kentucky, 40268. For those of you who are new to the show, 858-683-1326 and 502-805-0334 are the phone numbers. And you can also join us by listening live in the queue, as a lot of people are doing right now as we speak. Just make sure you hit the number one on the dial pad so you know you want to be heard on air. And additionally, the chat room is now open, so feel free to join us in the live chat if so inclined. You can join our live chat using Facebook and Twitter social media. Ed Martin should be joining us momentarily. It looks like he's running just a little bit behind. I could tell you, folks, you know, I live in Kentucky, right here in Louisville. We've got a lot going on these days. We're going to get into a little bit of the Ford story I put out here in the next few minutes. But, you know, we had an interesting status given to us last week. We are in Kentucky, the fifth worst, yep, you guessed it, the fifth worst run state in the country. Can you believe that? I certainly can. The liberal leadership in Kentucky has totally destroyed what Kentucky is. We are the fifth worst run state in the country for a reason. We have no economy. We've got the 23rd highest debt per capita, the 7th highest unemployment rate. These are just some of the things we've got. Typical households And this is wrong, too. But they're saying the typical households earned less than $44,000. I think you could say we earned less than $40,000 last year. That's lower than all but four other states total. To see how we compare to our neighbors, Indiana, yes, our good friends over in Indiana, are ranked 28th best-run state. So we're the fifth worst. Indiana's the 28th best-run state. And what's the difference? Oh, yeah. Indiana has a Republican governor and a more conservative way of doing things over there. And they also have, you guessed it, a little bit better election system that we have here in Kentucky primaries. So, you know, we look at all of these things in play. You know, we told everybody last year we were going to get worse. We did. And earlier this year, coupled with the fifth worst run state in the country, we were also ranked the second most unhappy state in the country. You know, it's gloom and doom here, folks. It's gloom and doom in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And we wonder why. And we wonder why. Right out of the gate, we've already got Paul upset. What's going on, Paul?
Unhappy? Kentuckians unhappy? What do we got to be unhappy about? My God, we've got the premier state-supported Obamacare portal in the nation. We shouldn't be unhappy.
You're right. We've got Obamacare. We've got a great number of people living off the government that don't have to work. Absolutely right.
And ask the fine folks in eastern Kentucky in particular and some in western Kentucky, since Obama and the EPA has declared war on coal, ask them how much they enjoy having a significant reduction in household income because of the number of coal jobs that have been lost as a direct result of EPA and Obama. So why would we want to be unhappy when we've got all of these wonderful government actions impacting us left and right? Why would we? I don't understand it.
I think we should all be ecstatic myself. I mean, Kentucky is a welfare state. You know, we take in more than we pay in. Louisville is the economic engine of Kentucky. And if you're talking about an eight-cylinder car, we're running on six or seven cylinders. We can't even get to full speed there because of liberal policies. And, of course, you know, Louisville isn't paying more than they get back either. And we're the best we have to offer. So, you know, that's
Our future in Louisville really looks promising, too, because the future in Louisville, and for folks that are commuting across the Ohio River bridges that are being constructed, we get to look forward to paying tolls, even though when this project was first proposed, all the leaders said there weren't going to be any tolling. But we've got that joy coming up in the near future as well. So, and I don't understand how we can possibly be the fifth unhappiest state in the entire United States of America. Look at all the stuff, good stuff that government is doing for us.
Well, we're the fifth worst run state. We're the second unhappiest state.
It's even worse.
And that's exactly it. We're building a bridge so that Indiana can get more employees over there out of our daggone state. We aren't doing anything except raising taxes and causing fits for most people through, you know, invisible taxes, you know, sort of like what you guys do at Stop It. You know, higher MSD fees, higher water fees, all owned, controlled, lock, stock, and barrel by the Louisville Democratic government. Where does it end? I don't know. But, you know, we're the second unhappiest state in the nation. I find it shocking myself because I have so many positive, happy stories to share each and every night here. I mean, I feel like I'm throwing puppy dogs and rainbows to the general audience because we're just so loving it here. None of these things surprise any of us. What the surprise is, folks, and Paul, you know, what the surprise is that this is not anything new. Each and every time they do these studies, we are further down the list. The only one that is more unhappy than Kentucky on the unhappy states list right now is West Virginia. And we're going to surpass them in the next survey. So, you know, that's the thing. Has liberal leadership done any good anywhere? Well, hell no. Hell no. And that is the problem. And that is a problem. We continue following some sort of liberal ideology in this country. We continue to elect buffoons like Barack Obama. And let's be clear here. In November, just last month, we had these things called elections. And in these elections, 30 of the 60 senators who backed Barack Obama and his Obamacare were thrown out of office by we the people. Mary Landrieu down in Louisiana got her ass handed to her on a silver platter in a runoff election on Saturday, which finally sealed the deal. So, you know, we know that liberalism doesn't work, and maybe we're making a difference somewhere. Maybe it's just a lot slower than I expected to, but I found that very, very interesting that, once again, Kentucky is ranked at the bottom as worst-run states. It's not coincidental. I think it's purely intentional. We like getting that federal government so we can make excuses for failure, and they dole that daggone federal tax money around and the state tax money around to make people more dependent so that people like Steve Beshear, Jerry Abramson, guys who have never done a damn thing in their life except lived off the public sector, and I don't care that Steve Beshear wants to say he was a private attorney and everything else, he was getting paid by our taxes for most of his work. We look at all of these things. Is it hard to see why we're the fifth worst run state, Paul?
No, it's not, Ed. And the irony is that they've got a pretty good chokehold on the way this state is run. You alluded it in your opening remarks that one of the biggest obstacles to we the people being able to regain control and direction of our state is our election system. And you are 100% on target with that comment. Our election system is abysmal. It protects the two-party system, and it does not protect the people at large. It's just that simple. Indiana's system, as you mentioned, is better, but it has some things that need improving as well. But compared to Kentucky, Indiana's system is clearly superior. So we got a lot of work to do. The question is, can we get it done in one lifetime?
Boy, I tell you what, I have no idea. It's not looking good for me. I'm getting a little bit older, and I've been working my butt off for a long time. We're making little gains, but not nearly enough to make really a lot of good forward motion to happen. And I tell you what's interesting here, too. I mean, I saw this a little meme up on Facebook earlier today, and somebody shared it on my page, and for the life of me, I can't remember who it was now. But it was an interesting point that I really, really liked. And it said the politicians in it, I mean, it talking about the politicians in this country. Where else can you go? But the politicians seek all the money from the rich, all the votes from the poor, and they're successful because they convince both of us that we're the problem. Think about that. Think about that. We convince all the poor people that the rich are the problem, so they get all the poor people to go vote for them because they want to give them everything. That's liberal policies. And then you look at the rich, you tell the rich, you know, that you need all this money to stay elected so you can protect their interests. They play us off of each other better than anything in the world. We're divided by race, we're divided by age, we're divided by sex, we're divided by income, we're divided by anything and everything in this country. And these fools play that game against us like crazy. And I think we've seen a lot of great evidence of that in the last few weeks. With all the rioting, all the looting, and everything else, we're trying to say that, you know, all white people are racist and all black people are good, and we're seeing all this crap happen on TV. And if you dare say that the people who are doing the rioting or looting are scumbags or thugs, ask Charles Barkley, you know, then you're chastised. If you're in the black community and you say that, you're an Uncle Tom. If you're in the white community and you say that, you're a racist. And it doesn't make much sense to me. And now we've got more stories. Right here in Louisville, and this is one I'm going to get into pretty quickly. But late last week, a nurse by the name of Renee French Rainey, she's employed at a Norton Media Care Center, okay, you know, made a post on her own personal Facebook page. That said, you know, and a poll said that we needed real ammo, not rubber, that the authorities have betrayed the law-abiding peaceful citizens by allowing this to happen. If you shot a few of them, the others would scatter like the cockroaches they were. Now, this was a comment in regards to the Ferguson rioting and looting.
This employee was fired from Norton's last Tuesday. She was fired because they said that this brought Norton in a negative light because she was identified as an employee for Norton. And 2 years ago, they had changed their rules that said if you make any opinions on your blog or any social networking site, that you have to put a statement out there that these views expressed are of your own and not of those of the company. Now, most people on Facebook, including me, you know, we list our employer and other things on Facebook on your About page. I do that, obviously, because it helps me a great deal to do so. I own this media company. We do all of these things. You know, so for me, it's social media is a networking deal. But because she happened to put that she worked for Norton's on her Facebook page, she was terminated for making that statement. Now, here's my problem with this, folks, and I do have a major problem with this. Because nowhere did she say anything about race, black or white. She referred to people who acted like that, and she actually referred to the authorities about betraying the lawful, peaceful, abiding citizens because they allowed this to happen. And I totally agree with that statement. You know, and she did go on to say that if you shot a few of them, the others would scatter like the cockroaches they are. She never said anything about black, white, green, yellow, or purple. And it was her personal Facebook page. She was off the clock. She was on her own time. She was not using Norton Healthcare equipment. Where do the rights of the First Amendment and free speech end? Because the problem I've got with this, you know, a lot of people will disagree with me, and I've been coming to a couple of these arguments today on this. But here's the thing. 51% of employers who do any research on job candidates research social media and have not hired someone because of a statement made on social media. That, to me, is disturbing. But Samuel Markosin, a law professor at the University of Louisville, this is who they go to for a quote, right? Sam Markosin, a law professor at the University of Louisville, actually had the nerve to say that in the case of Rainey, that her exposure appears to be fairly limited since she's not a high-profile member of the community besides this Facebook post. So she'll be able to go into her next job without anyone knowing anything about this within a very short period of time. I call bullshit. This is nothing more than a liberal damn professor sitting out there trying to minimize the fact that this woman was denied her First Amendment rights only because they were a private employer. Only because this was a private employer. Trying to say that this basically goes away. Folks, this is the 21st century. And Paul, I'm curious to hear your thing on this, but this is the 21st century. You put it online, it stays online. She did anything and everything on her own time. She was angry and disgusted at the violence that was being shown on TV. She didn't say anything racial at all. And this has been covered everywhere nationally. All the national news media has picked this up. You can't go on Facebook without finding 1,000 stories about this. You can't go on Google without finding 1,000 stories about this. 51% of employers don't hire you if they see anything negative on your social media that you've been called attention to. Norton's called attention to this by firing this employee. There were other options that they could have taken. Paul, I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this.
Well, this is kind of a multidimensional situation because in one sense, if this lady had been aware of this change of policy 2 years ago, then she clearly was negligent in doing the posting, having the Norton name attached to it. That's assuming that she was knowledgeable, all right? And there's no guarantee that she was knowledgeable because employers, big employers in particular, they a lot of times will make a policy or a policy change that doesn't get a lot of publicity within the company, and you know people will run afoul of it, and that'll be the first time they discover that this new policy or policy change had happened. So we don't know the backstory on that, and of course the mainstream propaganda media will never dig that deep to find that out. They never will because you didn't report it. And which means it wasn't there. It just wasn't there. So you right. can't rely on the mainstream propaganda media to dig beneath the titillating headline. All right. Number two, there's a couple of concepts that we don't banty about too much anymore. We kind of take it for granted. And those terms are involuntary servitude, which used to be called in the 1800s slavery, involuntary servitude. And involuntary servitude, by and large, has been replaced by its cousin, voluntary servitude, which is what most people become when they hire on as an employer or with an employer. So we voluntarily choose to be servants to the employer. But you raise a great question. It's been addressed several times by the United States Supreme Court, and it is, when do we surrender our constitutionally guaranteed rights? How much of those rights must we surrender in an involuntary servitude situation? And we've gotten some mixed rulings. There are certain things that we can and cannot do, but the question always becomes in my mind, Ed, is do we really surrender those rights by simply agreeing to work for an employer, whether the employer is public or private? I'm not so sure that we completely surrender those rights.
Well, that's the road we're going down, and that's the whole problem. We're supposed to give up our rights as American citizens to have a job. Are you kidding me? I mean, you know, I don't understand how Norton's, and truthfully, Norton's wasn't even aware that this post had been made, didn't know anything about this. Insider Louisville called Norton officials to seek a comment from them. And according to Thomas Johnson, that's how they found out. He's a spokesman for Norton Healthcare. And Thomas Johnson went on to say, this is a touchy situation. You know, and then he's the one who told us, you know, their policy says that, you know, your social network is side of your own and not those of the company. But, you know, this is the problem.
Well, here, let me just add one more twist to this whole concept of voluntary versus involuntary service. Okay. We've seen numerous examples throughout the nation when it comes to our students in both public and private schools, both elementary, middle, and high schools, that are getting sanctioned by their schools for their private postings done on their computer, on their personal accounts, on their own time. And
right.
The schools have been claiming jurisdiction over their behavior when they're not involving anything to do with the school. So that brings up another one of my favorite questions that I don't always have a clear answer to, and that is, are we, the people here in this country, are we nothing more than chattel? Because if you take the behavior of the school systems nationwide, they behave as if the children are their property and must be managed 24/7. Okay? So, you know, it certainly is implied that the children are chattel. Well, by extension, if the children are chattel, then the parties that are responsible for their care must be some form of chattel as well. So,
oh, sure.
That's always puzzled me, and I have never gotten a really clear explanation as to whether or not the United States citizens, are nothing more than pieces to be bought and sold, moved or removed at the whim of somebody in a higher authority. Go figure.
Well, what's disturbing to me, I mean, what really disturbs me more than anything is the fact that this is an employee, again, on Facebook that's doing their own thing. And when you get into the schools, I mean, it's the double standard. It's the double standard, and it's the fear. I mean, it really is. It's the fear, some sort of inherent fear by white people in this country who have this white privilege guilt on their conscience or something. And I know that makes me sound like a racist, and I'm sorry if you can't handle the truth, listening audience. I really am. But the reality is we have seen teachers in Chicago, for example, during the teacher strike and all the other things that were going on up there, talking about the white privilege We saw it in Occupy by people who were employed by you know, assumedly places like Norton Healthcare. We see all kinds of people with jobs that just happen to be black get away with saying anything they want to and make it racist about white people. But they don't get terminated.
You got a problem? You got a problem with double standards?
You must be one of those
unhappy Kentuckians. You're one of those unhappy Kentuckians. I can tell.
I'm the most unhappy guy in the world. Just ask anybody. But you know, no, it's seriously true though. It really is. It makes no sense to me. This double standard is what creates this. At Norton Healthcare, if I want to go through Facebook and start finding employees that work at Norton Healthcare, it'd be one of the easiest things in the world to do. And I promise you, I'm 100% certain that there will be a profile somewhere from a person of color that will be denigrating the white people and the white man for whatever reason, make a racial comment, and they will still be employed there even after I let Norton Healthcare know it. Because Norton is scared of the lawsuits that say, oh no, this was discrimination based on race, instead of having a fair. And that's what racists do. They divide us. As far as I'm concerned, when Norton Healthcare fired Rainey for this, they showed that they are a real racist. They did. In my opinion, they did. This was a racist move. There were plenty of options. Ms. Rainey never, ever said one thing that was racial in any way, shape, or form. She was angry about the violence, and it was clearly obvious in her comments that she was angry about the violence, but she didn't say anything about racial.
And Ed, that's a really, really good point, because the vast majority of listeners to your show and the vast majority of people in American society would automatically migrate to this thought, and that is, if this was an infraction of the workplace, then why wasn't she disciplined with some form of progressive discipline, which is the norm in today's workplace? You know, there are certain things that require instant dismissal. Does this rise to the level of instant dismissal? I think
there was
not.
No threat. Yeah, there was no threat.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have been anything. You could have had it written right up. You could have had a suspension. Anything short of termination, if you felt like you had to escalate to get this message through, anything short of termination would have worked. Would have worked.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ed. And this lady, I think if this lady ends up pursuing getting her job back, she very likely will win, or she'll win some type of cash settlement. But I think Norton is clearly out of line on this, and I believe they're going to lose ultimately.
Oh, I agree. And I will tell Ms. Rainey now, she's a listener to the show, call me. I've got great attorneys. They would love to help you out with this. I spoke to a couple of them today. This is going to be one of the easiest lawsuits in the world to make. It really is. And that is what's so tragic, is because, once again, you've got an employer sitting here as a racist. And that's what I thought, and that's what I took from this. And, you know, I was very upset by it. You know, I wasn't happy with the comments. Don't get me wrong. Nobody likes to see that kind of comment. But I was very disturbed that an employer felt like they should be able to control your private life on your time and your statements. Never once said that I work. Never once did Rainey ever state, I work at Norton Healthcare, and this is what we think. Never once. Never once did she say anything about black or white. Never brought race into the equation.
I think you bring up another good point, Ed. I think you bring up a good point on this, because it wasn't what she said. It was the way some one person interpreted it. Okay, and that's given a lot of credence to that interpretation being accurate, and I think it was not accurate. I think it was clearly distorted. So now the question becomes, why? What was the motivation of the individual who distorted her comment and made it a racial thing when, in fact, if you take a look at the words, it's not. It's not. It's not.
Oh, I agree.
Her meaning was clear. She was talking about the thugs on the street. She was comparing the thugs to those disgusting insects called cockroaches.
You betcha.
That particular comparison has been used in our society for decades, for several generations. And it had absolutely zero racial overtones until somebody here in Louisville decided to suggest that it had racial overtones.
And that's the tragedy of it. If a company isn't any smarter than that, they don't need to be in business. Truthfully, that's the way I believe. I tell you how bad it is. I mean, I put a post. I don't know if you're familiar with Facebook or not, but there's a guy by the name of Adrian Long. He is a security officer at a little mall in Atlanta, Georgia, a mall that is full of prostitutes, drug dealers, you name it. It's the worst of the worst. Okay? Adrian
Long.
Are
they happy down there, though? Is that state one of the happiest states down there? I'm just curious.
I didn't want to look at the whole list. It didn't serve the tonight's show. But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though, and this is what's fascinating about it. Adrian Long goes to work every day, and he wears a bulletproof vest because the job is so bad there. There's that bad there. He wears a bulletproof vest. He carries a taser, a 9mm. And, all kinds of different things. He has a GoPro camera attached to his chest that runs at all times. And he also has a camera attached to the hat that he wears. So anything that he does is constantly recorded.
Yeah.
All right? He has the police recorders, if you will, that everybody says we want. So Adrian Long takes these things and he protects himself. Well, there was one of the videos put up. Happened to have a woman. Adrian Long was protecting his mall, doing things he had. There was a couple of kids, unsupervised, right on the sidewalk, right in front of the entrance. They were doing something stupid, and he yelled, and all he did was say, "Hey." All he did was say, "Hey," all right? Because they were out of line, just yelled, "Hey," and got the kids' attention, and they stopped. And anyway, long story short, this mother comes up, and starts jumping into Adrian's ass for having the nerve to say hey to her children and telling him to leave him alone. Well, she started getting violent, screaming and yelling, chest bumping him, cussing him up and down like a sailor. He kept telling her to back off, get out, back off, get out, back off, get away. She wouldn't listen. She finally became violent and started smacking him. So he tased her. He tased her. All right. So this video gets shared on my timeline on Facebook last night. I watched the video, and I'm like, good for you, Adrian Long. This is what's wrong with kids today. So I shared that video on my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page. And the first thing that happened is some white privileged guilt son of a bitch decides he wants to accuse me of being a racist. Why did you post that on it? You only posted it because you're a racist. Why? Because the people involved happen to be black. The security officer was black. The woman who was tased was black. The out-of-control crowd and the children, these 5 and 6-year-old kids, were screaming at this officer and stuff because of the antics of their own mother. Now, I posted that to show what's wrong with our children today. But this person automatically assumed that I put it up there because I was a racist, because they deal with this
white guilt.
You know
that person. That person would love for you to mention their name. I hope that you never mention their name. I wouldn't give them the satisfaction.
Curtis Morrison, the guy who was run out of Louisville for getting caught doing illegal taping of Mitch McConnell stuff. Curtis Morrison
That's
is
funny.
Who it was. Oh, it's funny.
That's
so he stays out in California. He does his crap all the time. He always
it's okay
gets on
for him,
Facebook pages
it's okay
and accuses
for him
us of
to do illegal and unethical things, but yet he wants to try to accuse you of doing something that was neither illegal nor unethical. That is a hoot.
Oh, yeah.
That's
oh, yeah.
A hoot.
He ran to California because if he comes back here, he's going to jail. I mean, we know this, or at least I think he will, because he was found to be illegally wiretapping Mitch McConnell. And, but that was a fascinating thing. That's the third time in a week he's tried that white privilege guilt crap on stuff. He didn't bother about thinking about these poor kids being videotaped acting like that because their mother was.
Yeah.
No, immediately you have to go to race. And the problem is he's not alone. The problem is he's not alone. You know, and
Ed,
that is the sad reality where we live.
Curtis serves as a good example of two things that you like to refer to, and that is, number one, He's a good example of why liberals are just so wrongheaded in everything that they do. Curtis right. wants the world to believe that he, as a liberal, knows what's best for everybody else, and that he has the authority, and he's got this on this mission from God, where it's his job to go around telling everybody that they ought to need to live their lives the way he sees fit. Number two, the other theme that you like to pound on is, Curtis is clearly part of the Democrat establishment. Clearly. He is absolutely not just a spokesperson. He is an action agent for the Democrats. And so both of these entities are going around telling everybody how they should live their lives, and yet they refuse to follow their own advice.
Oh, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. You know, and that's what makes it all fascinating, and that's the problem. Curtis Morrison has never done a damn thing in his life, not done one damn thing in his life to accomplish anywhere. All right? That's just the reality of it. He's a typical liberal that wants to go around and start making excuses and save the whales and take care of me garbage. That's why he's in California. He's trying to go to law school there. I commend a guy for trying to improve his life, but really, truthfully, don't sit here and give me this white guilt apologetic bullshit because I was trying to make a point about children. You know, well, you can find all kinds of videos online with white people doing the same thing. I never Googled anything.
Yeah.
I didn't spend any time on this. You know what I mean? Try to act like I was spending hours out there trying to find something like this just so I can make it racial. No, I shared a simple post on my Facebook. It took about 30 seconds, just like everybody else on Facebook does. But that is it. The mindset is we've got to find a way to accuse someone of being a racist to satisfy ourselves. And that's the problem that we've got.
As I recall, California is one of the easiest states, if not the easiest state, in which to get a law license. So I understand why he's out there if that's what he's pursuing. He wants an easy trip to getting his law license. Then he can be not only a liberal asshat, but he can be a legal asshat. Go figure.
Well, he thinks it's going to get him protection. Let him think what he wants, you know. But I tell you, that's the kind of stuff we run into around here, and that's it. All I'm asking for is to be treated fairly, period. Quit giving me this bullshit about slavery. Ain't a person alive today who has ever been a slave, period. Quit giving me this garbage about labels. You know, I've been called a European male lately. Screw that. I'm a white boy that was born in America, and I make no apologies for being born white, nor do I make any apologies because I treat everybody by the same standard. I don't care if you're black, white, green, yellow, or purple. That's just the way it is. You know, it's fascinating. I do want to get into a couple of things, Paul, while you're here. But it's interesting because now Louisville is going to be going to these body cameras. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Adrian Long, a security officer using body cameras. And Louisville, LMPD is looking at body cameras. Apparently, the big problem has been they haven't been able to pay for it yet. So with that in mind, we know that in Clarksville, Indiana, they have been using body cameras for a little while. Clarksville, Indiana started wearing these small body cameras about 2.5 years ago. And, of course, the police officers were really concerned. They were concerned about the use and everything else. But the reason I bring all this up is, are body cameras really going to make that much of a difference? And I tell you why. Because I've been very vocal about me being arrested a couple of years ago on trumped-up charges that they just wanted to play with me and make me suffer for. You know, and we look at this. Police cars, for the most part, all have dash cams in them today. They pick up most interactions that they're involved in. In my particular situation, the dash cams were operational, but mysteriously, the audio disappeared. Matter of fact, one of the officers got a written warning for not using for the audio having problems, not maintaining his equipment properly, which means he turned the audio off so he couldn't get caught saying the bullshit that he was saying to me. The problem I've got with body cameras is that information is still controlled by the ones who use it, the police. It's almost like internal affairs investigations. Now, I'm not saying all internal affairs investigators are bad, but we do know in places like New York, Chicago. We've had different things, different audios and visuals disappear, all right, during an internal affairs investigation. So the only problem I've got, our body camera is really the answer here. If we don't change the system that we're using to hold the police accountable.
That's an excellent question, Ed, because that you're having the accused miscreant investigate themselves, all right? Now, if you are called before a government agency because of something that they believed you had done that you shouldn't have done, how long do you think it would take them to respond to your request to do your own investigation of yourself in an effort to get their question addressed? And the answer is it would take about one New York second for them to say no way, no how. So we're supposed to accept the fact that our entire system of government is supposed to be able to investigate itself in an unbiased manner? I think not. Yeah.
And that's my problem. I like the fact that we would put body cameras on police. I think it's good for police, but I also think it's good for us. Because, you know, the whole dynamics, and Chief Mark Palmer over in Clarksville, Indiana, you know, says that, you know, it took a long time for people to get used to it, but he wanted to prove that, you know, that they were trying to be transparent in their actions. He also says that a lot of the, you know, complaints and everything else have dropped since they started wearing these body cameras, these cameras and stuff. You know, and the fact is that when you look at all the dynamics behind the body cameras, it really does change the conversation in a lot of cases. I mean, a lot of police pull up on scenes and are treated like shit and talked to like dogs and really put in some serious situations no person should ever have to put up with. But when somebody knows they're being filmed, they typically act different than they do when they're not being filmed.
There you go.
So that's what I wanted you to hear. Yeah, so it does make a difference as far as the interaction is concerned. However, in the event that you have a situation that gets out of hand, you know, I know firsthand that equipment is manipulated because it was manipulated on my case. You know, I still won, but it didn't matter. It should have never happened in the first place. And mine was an easy case. I wasn't a guy, you know, that was beat up profusely and stuff. I mean, you know, yeah, okay, verbally and everything else, sure. You know, but physically, you know, I didn't have black eyes or welts on my head. I admit that freely. But I never gave them a reason to do that. You know, but the reality is that when the rooster is guarding the hen house, you've got a problem. And we have way too many instances now where we're using these dash cams that we spent good money for that are doing the job they're supposed to do, but, you know, evidence is being erased. You know, accidentally is one of the biggest reasons that we get, which is a lie. You know, when things are backed up on a computer, nothing gets accidentally erased. There's somebody that has to make that decision and then push the button. So that's the only problem I've got with the body cameras. I love the fact that body cameras, it does change the dynamics when an officer pulls up on a scene. When people know they're being filmed, they do act a little bit different. But I'm not sure that it's going to change anything unless we look at how we view available evidence and who makes the decisions. Because policing just simply does not work in every case. And this is when I think we really need to start getting into civilian review boards, and we need to start really focusing, even internal affairs. I think that we need to have, if you want to put a police officer in internal affairs, that's fine. But you make it a panel. I know when I interviewed, there were two police officers I interviewed with on my complaint with the police. You know, they were going to type things up entirely different than I told them. And I said, well, wait a minute. And I brought a copy of my complaint with my words. And I said, you just copy-paste these onto there. This is my complaint. You put it in any box you want to. And I, of course, read it before I signed it. You know, I wasn't going to let them do their own thing. But most people don't. They don't know. They really don't. Right here in Louisville, I know that there have been instances that people wanted to file a complaint, and they were told they weren't allowed to or they couldn't. It was a lie, but it happened. So, you know, we look at this kind of stuff, and this is where we need civilian review. if we're going to go down this road, we're going to spend this kind of money. I think Chief Conrad said it was going to cost up to $800,000 for us to do this, and we're looking at having a pilot program, which I think is a crock, but a pilot program in June of 2015. There's no reason to take another 6 months on this, but, you know, at least we're going to get there. The first
did
place that they're going to use...
Yeah, the place where they're going to do the pilot program, I almost fell over laughing, is one of the safest areas of Jefferson County, Kentucky.
Right.
That's their pilot area, is one of the safest spots to live, work, and play. And they're going to be making decisions on the basis of the results of that particular pilot program. And they're going to extend that to the rest of the county. Now,
yep,
I don't know about you, but
that
brought a chuckle to my day.
Well, for our Louisville listeners right now, let's let you know what this means. This means, I mean, in 2013, the police tested different types, according to Major Robert Schroeder. He's part of he heads the department's administrative services division. But this is what's really kicker. The cost to store the data and the recorded video is why they ended the pilot program last June. They didn't have funding to store the video. I find that a hilarious excuse. But yeah, you're right. Chief Conrad has announced that they're going to test the cameras in Louisville's Patrol Division 5. Patrol Division 5 is the Highlands, Cherokee Park, Seneca Park. That's where they're going to start testing at. Why are they not testing these things down in the West End?
Wait a minute. It's racist. They're focused on a primarily white area.
Oh, you
they're
betcha.
Leaving the black areas alone. They're putting citizens at risk. That's a racist program, Ed. That's a racist program.
I won't argue with you. And that's the
white
thing.
White privilege, Ed.
That's the thing. We're going to use this to show Louisville in a great light, because 90% of the problems they have when they confront people in those areas are not confrontational. So we're going to show these body cameras being used and how great we interact with the public, but we don't want to show the worst of the worst, because as they test program, we all know that the media is going to be watching every bit of evidence they can get, any video they can, all right, to see how these things work, because they want to report on all this fluff. So that's why they're not going into the worst parts of Louisville and going into the highest crime areas of Louisville, because they don't want the public to see during this test program what they've got. It's very concerning to me. And then, of course, explain to me something else, too, because I read the story out of the Courier-Journal today on this one. I believe it was Courier-Journal. Explain to me why people are still quoting Metro Council person Attica Scott. She's gone in 3 weeks, and they still quote her just about anything and everything they have to quote her for the police. And she says that the sooner the cameras are in use, the better, because it lets the community know the police department is willing to be a partner in community safety, and folks can have trust of police. This is a crock. The media is setting her up to be the next civil rights hero in Louisville, and she ain't nothing but a racist, always has been. And this is fascinating to me. You know, she wants to use a statement like that. Well, isn't that what the dash cams were supposed to do? To let the folks know they can have some trust in police because they're being recorded? But as we know, those dash cams are only recording when they want them to record. So, you know, this is a crock of stuff. It's just another example of what's going on. But Chief Conrad says it's going to cost somewhere between around $700,000. They're going to outfit 800 to 900 patrol officers. The rest of the officers in Louisville, of course, are administrative. We look at this, and it's going to be kind of interesting to see how it works out. I can't believe that they're having a problem trying to figure out a reasonable cost to store data. That one is amazing to me.
Hold on. Look, I know that you are not as computer savvy as I am. That actually is a legitimate concern, because the volume of data that they're going to have to store, and mm-hmm. this is partly as a direct result of public law, okay? Remember, all of this data will become subject to open records, all right? And they're going to have to hold on to this. They're going to have to archive this for a very long period of time. So that's a real, it's not only a cost concern, it is a logistical concern, and more importantly, in this area of cybersecurity, where are they going to store it? Are they going to store it locally? Are they going to store it off-site? Are they going to store it in San Francisco? Are they going to store it on the cloud?
That's one thing they mentioned. That would be a big cost.
That's a big cost. So
That's one thing that they mentioned. That's one thing that they mentioned.
Yeah.
Trying to work with the city's technology department to look at how they can store in-house data storage and how it can be cataloged and accessed. I understand that. But I also know this, that in just about any interaction with the police, you've got a 1 to 2 year statute of limitations to bring any charges at all. Okay? So what you're looking at is a shelf life for this information is going to be no more than 2 years. No more than 2 years. At that point, it can be destroyed because the statute of limitations has run dry, so you don't need the evidence. All right? If you want to do an open records request because you might want to pursue this charge, all right, before the 2 year period is up, they would be more than happy to give you a copy of the CD or DVD if it exists. And again, remember, these things are manipulated depending on what kind of outcome they want. I know this firsthand. So the cost, you're talking about a rotating cost, is the point I'm trying to get at. All right? You can put all of this on CD, DVD, whatever, and save those like that. You know, you don't have to have the data storage completely adding and building and building and building. It just doesn't make sense to me because of the statute of limitations. You know, there's stuff that I try to get open records on now, and I'm told, sorry, it's been destroyed because of statute of limitations, and it's only 2.5, 3 years old.
Well, yeah. Okay. Look, going to your argument that things are manipulated, I will confirm your suspicions and your assertion on that. A few years ago, I had an occasion to talk with a cop about a political candidate that I knew had some run-ins with the law, and they went back and obtained the actual data for those run-ins, and that data went back 8 years prior.
Right.
8 years prior. So somewhere they have it available, and maybe the general public can't get it, but this cop that I knew at the time, he sure could got it. He did get it. So I'll agree with you, Ed, on the manipulation thing. I'll agree with you on that.
Well, and let me also point out, too, Cy Zeris is in a chat room, and I know Cy works with this computer data and things like that. That's what he does. And he's telling me that, you know, in the chat room, that it would probably cost a maximum of $150,000 a year to cover storage for the Louisville Metro Police Department for this. Now, I have to say this. If the cost is so cheap, and to me that's cheap when you look at the budgets, $150,000 a year for storage. If our Metro Council members are so damn sure that this is what they want and they think that this is the greatest thing in the world, okay, he says it might be a minimum, not a max. Okay, well, let's assume that they're going to spend $260,000 a year. Let's almost double the figure that Cy put into the chat room. Let's assume they're going to spend $260,000 a year. The Metro Council members have over $200,000 per person in discretionary funds. If they're so worried about the community, could not 26 council members give up $10,000 a year of their discretionary funds and pay for the storage? It wouldn't cost us an extra dime, would it?
And there's more to the storage angle than just simply warehousing the data on some type of medium. In the world of politics and in the world of government, there was another thing that you mentioned out of the article. Storage was one element. Cataloging and indexing is another element. And so typically, cataloging and indexing requires a city employee to do that. And not just any old city employee, but one that typically is well-versed and correspondingly well-paid. In fact, the way this local government does what they do, it wouldn't surprise me for them to go ahead and hire between 3 and 4 city employees, probably at an average income of around 50 grand. So that's going to be an additional 200 grand for salaries. That doesn't even include the benefit packages, which are quite
generous. I appreciate that, but let me go this way.
I think you're up to, I think you're up to at least a half a million on all of that at a minimum, at least a half a million. Okay.
And Greg
so
Fisher just announced last week. It's not as expensive as you think. It's not going to cost any more money because last week Greg Fisher said that we have 12,000 hours per week that we are paying for in metro government that we don't need. And I tell you how said that. Last week he said that the city is now going to pay every city employee 2 hours of pay each week to go volunteer somewhere. So that doesn't make you a volunteer. That makes you a paid employee of whatever charity you want. There's 6,000 city employees, Paul. If we have 6,000 city employees that we can pay 2 hours a week to do nothing, that we're going to pay them not to do city business, that's 12,000 hours a week of payroll that we just shouldn't be paying out right now.
I agree with that.
So is plenty of money to hire these people and still save millions. It's also plenty of money to pay for the storage. But see, that's the thing with these liberals. They don't understand basic math, basic economy, or basic business functions.
No, they do understand. No, you're wrong. You're wrong, Ed. They do understand.
Well, okay.
They do understand. They do.
Well, they just like to ignore it. So that's the reality of where we're at. And like I said,
no,
I mean,
they're on a mission to force their worldview upon everybody else. That's what this is all about. They want to tell us how to lead our lives.
I'll agree with that. But the bottom line is, when it comes to money, money isn't a factor here. There's plenty of money. There's plenty of money readily available without taking any more money away from us whatsoever. They just choose not to. And if the Metro Council wanted to, they could fund this tomorrow out of their own discretionary funds. $10,000 per council member. They have over $200,000 a year that they control per council member. They most certainly can give up $10,000 a year of that to pay for storage. So what I'm telling you is that is a weak argument for storage. We're at the end of the hour, Paul. That went fast. I thank you for staying with us the whole time. You know, I want to give you a chance for some quick final thoughts, sir. Please go ahead.
Well, as you continue upon your never-ending campaign to bring common sense to the role of government operations, I at times, like a lot of folks, wonder if we can actually achieve sanity once again in the world of government. There are days when I think there is a glimmer of hope, and there are other days where I sit here and wonder, how on earth can we possibly solve this gargantuan behemoth called government and make it more responsive? So I think we need to tackle these government issues one at a time in ways that we can. And a lot of people think running for political office is one way to do that. That while that would certainly be expeditious, the problem with that is that you've got to have other like-minded people in the right places, and that's going to take a little while to get there. So focusing on singular issues that can help advance the larger agenda, in other words, taking a play out of the liberal playbook is what the rest of us need to do. We take a little nibble here, we grab a bite there, and we keep on getting these little bites until we get this behemoth under control. So keep on fighting, Ed. You're fighting the good fight, man.
I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you so much for calling in. I tell you, folks, you know, that really is the reality. How do we get the changes? We've got to get involved. That's where it starts and stops. We bring the truth to you every night right here at the Ed Springsteen Show and the entire MVM Radio Network. You may not like the truth. Most people can't handle the truth. They don't like the truth because it has to remind them of something being wrong, and it has to remind them that they have an obligation or a responsibility to correct it. Most people don't like obligations and responsibility. We get that. But that does not mean we're not going to continue trying. You know, when we look at the rights of free speech being thrown out the window because employers want to tell us what we can and can't do on our own personal time, I don't know any employer that's paying you 24 hours a day with the exception of our military. I don't know any employer who's paying me when I'm at home watching an NFL game and drinking a beer. I don't know any employer who's paying me for that time. And I don't know anybody else in the private sector is getting paid for that either. It's time to stand up for our rights as Americans, and that most certainly includes the right of free speech. So to Miss Rainey, Godspeed. Call me if you want. 502-742-8519 is the office number, and I will be more than happy to help you get some legal help. For everybody else, stand tall, stay vigilant. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock when I return. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be here at 7 with his own Tuesday Night Truth show. And with that said, take care. God bless. Have a great night, folks. Thank you.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.